Check, check. 1, 2. 1, 2. Testing, testing. Did film theories ruin our experience of The Last Jedi? Well, we're going to talk about it on this week's episode of the Star Wars Report Podcast, episode 316. Which is brought to you by Sperry. Explore an amazing collection of stylish Star Wars shoes. Available right now at starwarsreport.com/Sperry. That's spelled S-P-E-R-R-Y, and we do thank Sperry for supporting the program. It is the Star Wars Report, a very odd song choice, I know. I don't know, I've been on a classical music kick lately. Hey guys, I'm Riley Bland. Your host for this podcast. Today's podcast, a very impromptu podcast. Normally, we release very reliably. Sorry, I just love the song. Where was I? Oh, normally, we release on Monday mornings, but you're hearing this probably over the weekend. Happy Super Bowl weekend to all of us Americans who watch that kind of thing. Insert sports ball comment here. I'll do my best 5-second interpretation. Meh, don't like Tom Brady. Meh. That's my Super Bowl impression. Anyway, no. I'm Riley Blanton. I'm your host for this week's podcast. We're hitting up a kind of a weird release schedule right now for a couple reasons. I wanted to make up 2 weeks ago. It's an obsession now, guys. 2 weeks ago, we had to miss the show for extenuating circumstances. We were back last week, but very briefly, of course, recapping our experience at Downtown Disney Springs, whatever they call it. Who cares? Talking about the Star Wars VR there at the Secrets of the Empire. It's a new attraction down there. So go listen to last week's, or I guess earlier this week's podcast episode. But we're getting in a bonus show this week. And that's thanks to, well, you guys who actually make this happen, because I have to hit that weekly release. So we're making up, and we have so much feedback to go through. And also, I realized that it was literally just announced that the Solo trailer is debuting this Monday on Good Morning America. So we're all going to be Solo talk here. And I was like, well, we've got so many emails and talk and discussion on The Last Jedi left. I'm going to do a mailbag episode, and I want to bring up the topic of film theory. So those are the two things in today's episode that we're going to go over. Now, it's going to be another kind of an interesting episode because I am here in the studio in the Roswell Annex of the Star Wars Report podcast. And let me tell you, it's a little weird not being with my producer, Bruce, or with Mr. Mark Herleman on board on this episode, but that's okay. We will be back very soon for the discussion of the Han Solo trailer, which it's hard to believe that it's finally getting real that they're actually making a Han Solo movie. That's the thing they're doing. Because, man, if you listen to our last episode and look at the presence of merchandise and stuff that's going on at the Disney parks, you wouldn't even know there was a Han Solo movie, minus like one logo t-shirt they had in some of the shops. Other than that, nothing. Absolutely nothing. But let's start off with the first topic of the program, and that is something that I wanted to pull because with a lot of the feedback and the emails we're getting, a lot of it does kind of get back to the idea of subverted expectations. And I want to talk in this episode a little bit about where those expectations come from and the idea of the film theory as it is born in today's social media environment. I feel like it's a particularly significant social phenomenon when it comes to The Last Jedi in particular. Almost all the discussion around this film, pro and against, has a lot to do with what we felt like J.J. Abrams set up. But what we felt like J.J. Abrams set up in the Force Awakens, it really comes closely down to what our theories were about some of these characters and these plot twists, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to get into a lot of the feedback there, but I can't really describe that phenomenon nearly as well as the Film Theorists, which is this YouTube channel that literally does nothing but film theory and speculation and, you know, you know, things like 10 dark Harry Potter movie theories that would scare you, you know, that kind of thing. But there's this kind of self-reflective episode talking about Star Wars fan theory. The problem is it's a really long episode. I clicked the wrong thing. The problem is it's so long I can't play the whole thing, but I'm going to just like play the first few minutes here and kind of respond to it as we go. Because I find this absolutely fascinating. So credit goes to the film theorists on YouTube. We'll link to them.
You can't get a movie that's much more polarizing than The Last Jedi. Top critics on Rotten Tomatoes have given it a 96% certified fresh rating, while audiences score it at only 49% positive. On Metacritic, 94.5% of the reviews from critics are positive, compared to 38.2% of audience reviews. So, who's to blame for this disparity? Rian Johnson? Internet trolls? Porgs? As it turns out, it was... me?
I do, by the way, I do really like this guy's YouTube channel. He has a pretty fun way of presenting some movie theories. And he gets into this concept a little bit more. Here we go.
Welcome to Film Theory, the only show on the internet where talking about data regression and social psychology will actually make you more popular. And speaking of popularity, you may have heard that the biggest film franchise in history had another installment open not too long ago. No, not that one. Pitches. Although I can't imagine how they come up with
Pitch Perfect.
Acapella puns.
My fellow Acca people.
Oh, I'm Acca G!
Listen up, Acca ballers.
Oh, jeez. I forgot that movie came out.
Along, so they didn't even try.
Okay, awkward.
No, I'm of course referring to Star Wars. And before I go any further, I'm gonna make two things clear. One, if you still haven't seen The Last Jedi, and
yeah, spoilers.
For over a month, but
hey guys, by the way, if you haven't seen The Last Jedi, spoiler alert in this podcast.
And also teach me your spoiler-repellent ways, oh intrepid navigator of the interwebs. And two, I know that every word I've ever said about Star Wars to this point has been about as reliable as Hayden Christensen's acting.
What have I done?
But bear with me here today, guys.
Deep cut.
Today I'm not trying to predict Star Wars. Had enough of that. Instead, I'm gonna analyze it. Namely, how we can explain the huge differences in response to The Last Jedi. A lot of people loved it, particularly the critics.
I loved it the second
time. Yeah, good.
And a lot of people hated it.
And at this point, I hated the movie so much.
And boy, did the haters hate it. I mean, right now there's a petition written for Disney to remove The Last Jedi from the Star Wars.
I don't really. These petitions. Petitions.
Petitions with a few dozen signatures, but oh no!
Yeah, I got a lot of signatures. Whatever.
1,000 people have signed this thing. This type of extreme divide is pretty unusual, and so I, of course, wanted to analyze what the underlying cause was. But apparently, I didn't have to look too far for my answer. It was me the whole time. No joke, Ryan Parker from The Hollywood Reporter said, quote, "Points of disgust seem to run the gamut, but perhaps the underlying factor can be traced back to expectations born out of wild theories stoked by fan sites and YouTube channels." Sure, but he could be talking about literally any of the dozens of great Star Wars creators on- it's definitely me. Quote again, "A prime example of wild expectations not met is a fan-made video on YouTube titled Film Theory, Ray's Parents Solved. The fan video, more than 12 minutes long, deconstructs dialogue, looks between characters, and even the seating arrangement for the table read of The Force Awakens." Yeah, okay, but surely this has got to be an outlier, right? Nope, here's another. From Nick Johnston at Vanya Land, quote, "Lurking behind all this bitterness is a poison that's obliterating our cinematic discourse, the fan theory." Wow, not only am I, Matt Pat, small little YouTube creator, bringing down the entirety of the Disney empire, I am also destroying the entirety of film criticism as we know it with my... ability to overanalyze. Well, if claims like that don't deserve an episode, I don't know what does. At the risk of getting Inception levels of meta here, today's episode is a theory about theories. Do theories hurt movies and our enjoyment of them? Should I be looking for a new job? Why have I not fulfilled my loser's half of the bet I made last Star Wars episode and reenacted a scene from The Room yet?
You gotta tear me!
All in good time, my friends. All in good time. So if we're gonna determine whether theories are ruining movies, let's start with a pretty basic question. Can we prove that theories fundamentally change our experience when we watch something? According to psychology, the answer is a resounding yes. And there are three principles specifically that prove it. The first is known as the mirror exposure effect, which states that people tend to prefer things, people, and ideas with which they're familiar.
What Matt does here at Film Theorist here, because again, this is like a 10 minutes more of the video, so I'm not gonna play the whole thing, but he essentially breaks down the sort of psychological factors behind why we like what's familiar and why the age of the fan theory sort of breeds this sort of almost tribal this sort of internet tribal sets of teams essentially that like different versions of the story, and then they take the material that's come out so far, like The Force Awakens or the pictures of the table read or any set leaks or anything like that, and they construct whatever evidence they can to fit the film theory that goes into the last, once you're going into The Last Jedi. So is Rey a Kenobi? Is Rey a nobody? Is, you know, has hashtag Reylo going to be a thing? Luke Skywalker, and what's he going to do at the end of the movie? Like, all of these factors that we think about a lot as fans, it's interesting because I kind of divide it into two levels. One is the sort of industry that has popped up on the internet in the wake of it's particularly, you know, like these film theory YouTube channels and podcasts like us, right? That is sort of of the two levels, that's the level times 1000 ultra mega level of fan theory, where you're really digging into the evidence. And I think that certainly explains the divided reaction for The Last Jedi amongst the most hardcore of the fan community that's on social media and creating YouTube videos and podcasts like this one. But I also think that's a factor that shouldn't be dismissed at a lower level of just people who have theories about generally what Star Wars movies should feel like. And I think this is a legitimate concern because for the more casual fan or the person who's just enjoying and watching all the movies but certainly isn't going out there and creating YouTube videos or podcast, or even watching those YouTube videos or listening to those podcasts, like you listening to me now, I don't really put you in this category because we are so into this stuff that we definitely overanalyze, and we kind of, I don't know, I for one look at that as sort of a price of admission. But I think what The Last Jedi crossed on a larger scale was the sort of the structural mores, the structural norms of a Star Wars film, that's what took people out of the story, especially on that first viewing. A lot of these emails that we have from you guys and a lot of the ones that I got in those first few weeks from those first viewings, those are the most negative ones. And even talking to my friends, the most negative reactions to The Last Jedi always seem to be what's the word I'm looking for? Sorry, this is the point where Riley makes sure he's recording. Yes, I am. Okay, sorry. I just have to make sure. That would be a shame if I got this far in. But I kind of see both of those as affected, but certainly in the podcast realm and then in the realm of the people who are going and, you know, voting in mass on Rotten Tomatoes, and those who are sort of creating the narrative. Because that's the power we have as podcasters and as active participants in fandom. We can create the narrative, right? The narrative that the Force Awakens was a carbon copy of A New Hope was one I didn't really see become very mainstream until it had already been out for a few months and that had been popularized through social media circles. And so in the same way, I think that that's the power that we, the most hardcore, the most invested, the most likely to be establishing and getting attached to specific theories behind the characters, we set the trends. So it's interesting because I think a lot of the way that people look back on The Last Jedi will be defined by this sort of split reaction to it. And it could be very much like an Empire Strikes Back, where there's a lot of people who didn't like that at the time. And, you know, looking back, it's seen as one of the, if not the greatest Star Wars film. And who knows, maybe that'll be the case with The Last Jedi, but I kind of think not, if I'm being honest. I think because of the time, because of the era that we live in, that The Last Jedi is going to be kind of, its legacy will be this sort of, I don't know, this divisive film, simply put. But there you go, the fan theory. I don't know. There's a couple more stories that I had in here. That Rian Johnson has talked about and a few others, but I feel like that I don't know. I feel like I've covered enough on the topic. All right. because I have all these emails that we're going to get to for the rest of the show. So before we jump into the emails, I do want to give a quick shout out to everybody who's making this show, this program happen. And it's you fine folks supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/StarWarsReport, patreon.com/StarWarsReport. If you're listening to the sound of my voice and you're not a patron, well, you should be, because we have a bunch of great rewards, including weekly bonus audio content, and what's coming up next week after the trailer debuts. We do these Skype roundtables. We're actually currently scheduling that right now. Next week after the Han Solo trailer debuts, we have a special Patreon. We call it the Bothan High Council. The Bothan High Council of Patreon members. We all jump in on a Skype call and discuss at least once a month. And so we're getting ready to do one talking about the Han Solo trailer when it comes out. So if you're interested in joining the Bothan High Council, or if you just want to toss in a buck or two and collect the some of the weekly bonus audio content and join the exclusive Facebook chat, it's super easy to do. Just go to patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's patreon.com/StarWarsReport. And don't forget Sperry. Sperry is our sponsor for this podcast episode, and you should check out their incredible collection of Star Wars footwear available at StarWarsReport.com/Sperry. Their stylish selection of shoes is perfect for the Star Wars fan in your life, and their entire Star Wars collection right now is 50% off at StarWarsReport.com/Sperry. StarWarsReport.com/Sperry. That's Sperry. And there we go. That's, ladies and gentlemen, that's enough of the plugs. Let's jump into the feedback from Andy Beck. What's up, Andy? Hey, Riley and SWR. Happy New Year, bud. I thought since you guys were going to do fan feedback soon, I'd toss my Last Jedi opinions your way. My friends and I have discussed this movie at length, as I'm sure you can imagine. And the following are my thoughts in terms of good and bad. First of all, my first showing, I loved the movie, but by my second viewing, I had time to analyze it and think about a lot of the criticisms and understand the reaction somewhat. It made me sad that people are split on the movie, but I certainly understand why. When I think about it, The Last Jedi didn't give us that Star Wars movie feeling I got from The Force Awakens. There were scenes that were uncomfortable to watch. Thinking about The Force Awakens, there were some perfect moments. The Han Solo were home, Rey's intro, the Star Destroyer. I can't think of many perfect Star Wars moments from this film, at least first hand, or first off, anyway. Into the nitty gritty. I had to pare some of this down, Andy. Sorry about that, but just for time's sake. But some positive intro battle. Whole scene, loved it. Great effects. Throwback to Revenge of the Sith intro scene, loved it. Amen. By the way, I would put that as far as perfect moments. I'd say that opening is perfect. But anyway, twin sunset, death of Luke, the closest scene, closest to the perfect scene, take two, closest to a perfect Star Wars scene and a great homage to the whole Star Wars legacy. Yeah, those two moments, the one time I've teared up slightly in The Last Jedi, is that twin sunset. Man, it's so good. So good. criticisms. The flying Leia, man, Andy, you're not the only one. Although I appreciate what they were trying to do here, it didn't look good to me. Even in my first viewing, I was not happy with how the scene looked or went down. First of all, why she kind of seemed like a stick figure in space. You'd think there'd be some room for bending or contortion or something, you know, for that's just been thrown out into space. It looked like Leia was a stick figure flying through the air. I'll never like the scene. It's technical. It's a technical criticism. Mine isn't, mine is not plot criticism. I know there's a lot of people who don't like Leia's sudden display of such awesome force power, but I don't mind that. Andy, it looks like Andy, you don't mind that, but yeah, that's the one that it did. The CGI on that scene is just not good. It's just, oh, it's bad. And it's not, there would have been a way, because certainly, listen, it's icy in space and, you know, whatever, that's what it is. But when my first viewing, seeing that moment, the CGI was so bad And I don't like to be negative, guys. You know this about me, but I just got to tell it like it is. The CGI in that moment was so bad that I just couldn't get into it in the way that everyone around me in the theater was. Because, you know, Princess Leia's, you know, theme is swelling and everyone thought she just died. And so, like, there's even cheering at a couple of the viewings that I've been on. And I couldn't get into that scene because it's like, man, it looks sort of like, it kind of looked like you took, you know, one of those cardboard cutouts, craft, you know, craft projects you do in school, and you'd like take the cardboard cutout of the figure and then you'd kind of doodle the figure and then you would just like move that across the actual frame of the camera. That's kind of what it looked like to me. I'm not gonna lie. So Andrew, I agree with you. The other one, oh, Admiral Akbar's uneventful death. One of the most beloved characters in the universe, not even mentioned in his death. First of all, shouldn't have killed him at all. This for me is the Leia didn't hug Chewie moment of the film. What's funny is I didn't even notice. I didn't even think about it. But also, God, Viv, Akbar's one of the most beloved characters. I don't know. He was funny in Robot Chicken. Hey, I just had a cat jump in my lap. Hi, Nebula. Say hi to everybody. Somebody's upset. Oh, you poor thing. You know, I used to podcast and I'd get, when I was listening to podcasts, I'd get really mad at people who had their pets and would get distracted and get all distracted by their pets. I'm like, come on, guys, focus on the podcast. You know, put them away in their room while you're recording. Have some respect for your listeners. And I realized I left my door open and the family cat just came up and is very upset that I'm talking to a microphone and not paying attention to her. So they, I don't know. I dare say Admiral Akbar is not a very iconic character. He just is popular because of the Robot Chicken version of Admiral Akbar. Rose kissing Finn. Quite frankly, there wasn't enough developed screen time that I agree with to warrant Rose falling in love with the film that I disagree with. For the moment like this to feel real, you usually have scenes in movies where one is staring at the other unknowingly or something like that, and this didn't fit. It's interesting because the Rose Finn attraction is, it falls short of the Empire Strikes Back romance, but it did that intentionally. There's room for a sweet moment, but nothing more, and like a brief glance at the end when they're on the Falcon and, you know, he's getting a little blanket and Ray's like, oh, hey, there's Finn's got a new friend. And so, I don't know, there's... It does fall short of the Empire Strike. That's one thing that we are missing from Star Wars, right? That's bromance. Like, we haven't had... Well, certainly not an Attack of the Clones level of romance, but, like, even Empire Strikes Back, you have the... It's a very, very romantic film. I don't know. It's back to Andy's email. He said, I could go on like most fans, but that's enough for now. Although I definitely loved the scenes with Luke and how he wasn't really there. Wouldn't it have been awesome to see him force pull one of the walkers and everything to destruction? You know, he could have done it. That would have been awesome. Well, spilt milk. Rest assured, I'm always a Star Wars fan and like The Last Jedi. However, I'm happy and looking forward to see what JJ does with the next one. I think JJ has more of my taste when it comes to what Star Wars movies should be. You guys at SWR, keep up the great work and commentary. Us fans out there, love it. Bye for now, Andy. Andy, thanks for your email, man. Totally, totes legit, as they say. I definitely have a cat in my lap. This is not going to bode well for my ability to podcast. As if running all the tech without a co-host isn't enough of a challenge already. All right, email from Simon. Hey, Riley, Mark, and company. Greetings from Devon in the UK. Think of it as being like Edow, only wetter. Fair enough. Following your recent podcast, I wanted to put forward a perspective that I don't think was covered much, seeming the differential force powers between Rey and Luke. Yeah, we talked a little bit about this in a previous episode, of Rey as the hero's journey versus Luke and the force powers and abilities they show at different stages of training. Rey showing more of a force ability than Luke and reasons why that might be. I think it comes down to a nature versus nurture thing. Luke is raised as a moisture farmer by Owen and Beru, who know about his heritage and seek to hide it from him. Good point. So they may as well have shied away from situations, especially at an early age, where force powers may have manifested themselves. Whereas Rey, on the other hand, had to fend for herself from an early age. She has lived on her wits and perhaps unknowingly been using the force casually in her scavenger life. In character, Luke and Rey are very different when we first meet them. Luke is a whiny teenage boy, whereas Rey is a serious character. And it's not it's not unusual for boys to mature more slowly than girls. Hey, Simon. Or Devin, rather. Hey. That's fair. Maybe force powers mature as emotions mature. Anyway, just my thoughts. Love the show. Cheers from Devin in the UK. Devin, that's a good point. I'm not gonna lie. I don't like that explanation. Not that I don't like it. I don't necessarily. That's a little bit of off screen reaching, which is fine if it works for you. For me, I just accept it on a more surface level in that a hero's journey in Star Wars is not about what level of force power is displayed when. Like, there shouldn't be this sort of training checklist of what you can do at what point. There's nothing in Rey's story that, when I watch the movie, jumps out of, quote-unquote, out of bounds of what, you know, someone who hasn't been trained in the force does. So, you know, she knows how to fix the Falcon. She knows how to bypass a power coupling. You know, that is not outside of the realm of what a scavenger would know how to do. She knows she can pick up a lightsaber and use it. That's not outside of the realm of someone who's been using a staff to defend themselves, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. But I also definitely see the point of, you know, Rey is at a totally different level of maturity than Luke when we meet her in The Force Awakens versus meeting Luke. Someone wanted to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters. Well, look, it's only one more season. That's what we said last season. You know, it is a totally, they are two different characters in very different places, maturity-wise and emotionally. So, good point. Got an email from Bryant. Bryant says, "Hey guys, I'm not a Last Jedi lover or hater. By the way, I'm so proud of you guys. None of this sort of hyperbolic black and white, The Last Jedi sucked, or The Last Jedi was the best movie ever, and anyone who doesn't think so isn't a Star Wars fan." We're getting some nice, balanced view here. So bravo, people. Thank you. I'm not sure I'm with the Best Since Empire Club, but also far away from the worst Star Wars ever brigade. I would say it was really good first draft, but ultimately the script needed work. I think it would have been safe to say that I liked the direction that the story went, but I didn't like how it got there. Like, Rose and Finn, she should have hated him from the beginning. Her sister just died fighting the First Order, and here he is, an ex-stormtrooper. She could have turned a lot of heads his way with doubts of his true allegiance, and that would have added much needed depth and drama to his character and make the point for people not to trust him, which would have really paid off in the end when he's flying the suicide mission on the battering ram cannon. Bryant, dang it, you make a really good point. I started off in your email, I'm not going to lie, I was like, I don't know. I don't know that she should have hated him. You know, he was considered a hero of... But that's a very good point. After my most recent viewing, number 4, I realized that Rey never actually introduces herself to Luke by name. She actually says, "Your sister Leia sent me, I'm from the Resistance," but never once said, "Hey, you know, I'm Rey." And in the tree, Luke asks her, "Hey, why are you here, Rey, from nowhere?" Does Luke actually know who she is and is putting on a front? Like he doesn't know her, like Yoda did with him? Also, bonus, check out that blanket that Finn puts on Rose. Isn't that Lando's cape? You're kidding. I have no idea. I'll have to go back. When I watch it again, I'm actually about to go watch it again. My seventh viewing is about to happen with my dad this weekend. That'll be a good time. He's only seen it once, so he's anxious to go see it again. So we'll see where that goes. But Lando's cape, I'll keep an eye out for it. That'd be fascinating. I will say this, though, about Rose should have hated Finn. In some ways, I think that's explained... In some ways, I think that's explained best by her seeing him as the hero of the Resistance. So she's disappointed when she finds out that he's trying to run away, but I don't think she sees him as necessarily a traitor as much as a coward.
Traitor!
Excuse me. Well, I actually compromised my throat a little there. I'm still on the tail end of this last week's sickness as well. So, but that's one small caveat as to why Rose got along. But really, to be honest, Rose's role in the film was so much showing not just Finn but the audience what's worth fighting for with the Resistance now. Not just that, oh, we're fighting the bad guys, but like putting a Rose puts a face and a creed. Rose puts forth the creed that, you know, the Resistance is fighting for. And that's, to me, so important for the film, because it doesn't... If it's just the whiny, screaming children of the First Order, which, let's be honest, that's all they are. They're just a bunch of whiny, screamy, young fanatics. You got Hux, and you've got Kylo Ren. I mean, it's a wonder that organization functions at all. And so just having that sort of over-the-top villain as the bad guy, instead of seeing the corruption of the society as it's represented on Canto Bite, that's important. That is a very important part of the story. Now, let me also say this about Canto Bite, though. It does fall short in some ways, because it takes some shortcuts. Little shortcuts. It takes a little bit of the easy route to showcasing evil. It's not very nuanced, which I guess they're not trying to be nuanced, but the whole... I would have rather seen the slavery evil played up as the evil of the society instead of manifesting it through the Fathiers. Because by pinning it on the Fathiers, you're sort of... You know, Rose has that great dialogue moment about, you know, what happened with her planet and her sister and, you know, being enslaved and, you know, those themes. It would have been better to show the human tragedy and the human loss and the evil committed against the humanity, you know, or which I include aliens in that, but you guys know what I'm talking about. Instead of the Fathiers, because you had the line, like, one that still kind of falls a little short for me is in the film when Rose says, you know, it looks like they're not even going to get their codebreaker, and she takes off the saddle of the beast, and she's like, well, now it's worth it. And to me, that line would have worked if they, like, I don't know, freed a bunch of slaves, saved a bunch of lives, struck a blow against the First Order. There are a lot of things that could make that trip quote-unquote worth it, like keep the rebellion alive in some way, some spark that'll light the fire, you know, that sort of thing. But the fact that you were just taking the saddle off of an animal that, as I was watching, it was like, well, I guess that they're free now, and I hope that none of this highly advanced technological society will, I don't know, just round them up again or go get more and keep going to their races. I guess I think there are more effective ways to show a society's evil and corruption than the fact that they put a saddle on an intelligent racehorse alien. I mean, yes, that's mean, but it's not exactly like making it worth, like, if they fail the mission and all of the resistance died and disappeared, well, it was worth it. And I'm like, yeah, was it? Yeah, was it worth it? I don't, not quite, not quite. But I got where they're going with it, and I was willing to go along for that ride. But Bryant, you made me think of that with your email. So, all right, whew, this is a marathon. All right, one last email. How far are we in the show? I don't even know. I don't do these shows that often where it's just me, for obvious reasons, because Lord knows I have no business doing this. Oh, good heavens, we're already over half an hour. Well, look at that. Look at that. Let's do one last email here. Hey, Star Wars Report. This is from Bobby. First of all, thanks for the podcast, and get well soon, Riley. This is from last week. I'm almost there. Not that I'm helping things by recording a marathon podcast by myself. Anyway, Bobby says, first of all, thank you. Okay, so in The Force Awakens, when Starkiller Base was blowing up and Snoke told Hugs, I get it, to bring Kylo Ren to him and finish training, did he ever get that training? Also, what were the two lessons that Rey was supposed to receive from Luke, besides the first one? All I remember is her meditating the first and the discussion about the bird bath thing. Was that lesson two? And then where was lesson three? Okay, so lesson three was the deleted scene, Bobby. They actually just showed that in a recent Star Wars show where they're promoting the novelization where you can read about whatever lesson three was. I guess lesson three wasn't that important because they cut it from the movie. But it definitely shows in the dialogue. I remember, like, second viewing, maybe it was my third, I was like, wait a second, where's that third thing? But yes, the second lesson, the first lesson was, you know, the Jedi were way too proud and way too narrow-minded to think that the energy of the Force, the will of the Force, the living Force, belonged to them. That was foolish. That was lesson one. And lesson two was, it's time for the Jedi to end the discussion by the bird bath, the Jedi bird bath. And she's like, you know, we need you to come back. And he's like, no, this is why. You expect me to what? Go face off the entire First Order by myself? But that was lesson two. But that was from Bobby. Well, Bobby, thanks so much. And then for you listening to this very program, thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned again very soon, very soon, very soon. We will be doing a reaction episode to the Han Solo trailer, which airs this Monday on Good Morning America. So stay tuned for that. And a happy Super Bowl weekend to you. And I guess, well, actually, you know what? I was going to say I need music to play myself out. There we go. Boo. Boo. We're going back to classical music, guys. Sorry. I'm not sticking with the traditional intro and outro. This has been episode 316 of the Star Wars Report. Stay tuned after the credits for a little surprise. Anyway, hey, follow us on the Twitters. The Twitters, it's at Star Wars Report. Leave us a review on the old iTunes store, StarWarsReport.com/iTunes. And we do really appreciate those reviews. It helps get the word out. Tell your friends about us and share the episodes when they arrive online. That's a great way to do it. Facebook.com/StarWarsReport. And then the best way to follow me on social media, the place where I am happiest and warmest and fuzziest and away from the drama-iest is not Twitter, is Instagram. Instagram.com/TheRileyGuy or just at TheRileyGuy. That's what you want to do. Follow me there. Hey, RileyBlanton.com has a new blog post. It links to my video blog from this last weekend chronicling our trip to Orlando and Hollywood Studios and seeing the new Secrets of the Empire VR experience. There's some photos and the full video blog are linked at RileyBlanton.com, RileyBlanton. That makes that easy. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube. We've got some cool stuff coming, including more Star Wars Meditations episode featuring my friend Carl. He's got some more discussion videos that'll be going up on YouTube.com/StarWarsReport. YouTube.com/StarWarsReport. Go subscribe. And the links to everything we talked about in today's episode, including that film theorist episode, is going to be in the blog post at StarWarsReport.com at episode 316. So without further ado, that's going to do it for this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. Until next time, may the Force be with you. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. Thank you for riding Star Tours. Bye-bye. quick tag for you guys who stuck around for the whole show. This is a fun little promo. Just had a great interview with Dan Wallace. It's up right now on our Patreon, but if you don't have time or are not able to support us on Patreon, but you like the show enough to listen all the way to this point, shoot me an email, Riley@StarWarsReport.com, and I'll send that to you. It'll be appearing soon on the podcast, but it's a little early treat for you. And who knows, maybe some other bonus content I'll forward you. Riley@StarWarsReport.com. Shoot me an email. Thanks for listening, guys. So long. Now this is podcasting. Do 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 do. Need to turn the thing off. Do 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 do.